Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another episode of WrestleChat Radio's AEW NXT Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing both AEW and NXT at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Two very good outings by both companies for sure this week. And we'll be getting in depth in that in a moment. But before we get started, a couple of news items. The first one is we had announced a couple of weeks ago, several weeks ago, that John Morrison had signed. They officially made that announcement the other day. It's nothing we hadn't already known. If you were a regular listener to this show, you already knew it anyway. I'm not sure why the announcement took so long. Perhaps he hadn't put pen to paper just yet, but everyone knew it was happening. Everyone knew they had come to terms in whole on his contract. And from what I gather, Morrison will be starting on one of the main rosters, which kind of surprises me. Because I thought perhaps the best use for him would be to introduce him into NXT in order that you take a star out that you wanted to potentially graduate up to WWE. I don't even know if it's graduating up anymore at this part. At this point, you would have to say no. But to advance to the larger draw of Raw or SmackDown, let's say. And I think that would have been the best option. You could have utilized Morrison a lot more in NXT, and they may still do it, but you could have utilized him more in NXT, and again, it would have replaced someone who you were hoping to bring up to what they now consider the main roster, which could be a Keith Lee, who I know Vince McMahon is extraordinarily high on, or perhaps, someone else. I don't know who they had really had in mind for this, but what I'm told is that Morrison will debut on one of the two main brands, and it's leaning towards SmackDown. So we'll see if that holds true. Mike, what's your thoughts on the signing of Morrison? We let everyone know this about a month ago, but now it's official.
Well, before they even mentioned it, we were asking, would he sign with them? Yeah, and we said basically, yeah. We don't know the particulars of the contract, and I would assume that at some point he is going to make a movie with them. That's
sure.
Probably part of the contract. But, now, if it is SmackDown, it would make sense if he's on SmackDown, because isn't that where The Miz is?
Yes.
So they could put that team back together for at least for a short time, and have a very good tag team. Now, he's been a singles wrestler, but to tell you the truth, how are they going to get him to the point of where he's a contender or a title? That's my biggest question.
Well, it's not going to be easy. Especially considering, we don't even know if he's coming in as a face or a heel at this point. We don't know how that championship picture is going to go. I don't see him having a big program with The Fiend. I don't see him having a program with Brock Lesnar. I really don't. So I'm not sure where he's going to fit into this. That's why I really thought he would probably start in NXT. But Todd Morrison official now, and apparently, from what I hear, going to SmackDown. But where would you like to see him?
I like to see him on Raw. I like to see him have a series of matches with Seth Rollins. I think they could put on a great feud there.
Yeah, that would be not too bad. I guess they're leaning towards SmackDown because they want SmackDown to be their A show, but I think you're onto something there. There's nothing really for him other than that reunion with The Miz, and do they really want to throw him in a tag team right away? I doubt it. They probably want to keep him solo. So I'm thinking, you know, if they're going to bring him up to the main roster, maybe they should consider Raw. Seth Rollins and Morrison would be a lot better than, what's the option down in SmackDown? I don't know. Who would you go against? You know, I don't know. Daniel Bryan? I don't know. So we'll see what happens with Morrison. Next bit of news is, of course, Seth Rollins was on WWE Backstage. I thought he did a pretty good job, actually. There were a couple of things we wanted to discuss that we got a lot of emails about. And one was Seth Rollins being disingenuous when he said, look, a lot of my tweets are done on purpose to be controversial, and it's just, they're just fun. You know, when I'm typing to Will Ospreay, you want to compare bankrolls, I'm not being serious. I'm not saying, oh, I'm richer than you, so I'm better than you. I'm just saying, you know, I'm being playful. I'm trying to, you know, just stir crap up. It's not meant to be antagonistic, or it's not meant to be egotistical. It's just fun. It's just what we do for fun. And he didn't take it that way. He got merchandise out of it. He got T-shirts out of it and everything else. That's what the boys do, is what he's saying. And that the fans don't understand it, so the fans take a look at it and think that's you know, being a blowhard. And that, well, here's the thing. You can't get any inflections on a tweet. That's the problem with a tweet. So if someone says, hey, you know, that those brownies I sent you, were they good? And they were horrible. And I say, oh, yeah, they were really good. That's going to come out, oh, yeah, they were really good. When really I'm being sarcastic, saying, oh, yeah, they were just great. You know what I mean? You can't get any inflections in. So maybe we're wrong about this. I don't know. I have to give Seth Rollins the benefit of the doubt. That's all I can say. The one thing I will say that I agree with him 100% about, that I don't think a lot of people consider, is when they talked about his relationship with Becky Lynch and how it worked on camera, and he said, well, the problem is this. When the person you love most in your life and you are on camera together, and all people can say is there's no chemistry, there's absolutely nothing there, which I'm guilty of too, and there wasn't, by the way. That's hurtful, because you say to yourself, how can there be no chemistry when we both love each other and this is the person I love most in life? And when I have to hear constantly, oh, they don't look like they're in love, they don't sound like they're in love, they don't feel like they're in love, then there's no chemistry there. That's actually hurtful in a real way, not in a wrestling way, in a real way. But my advice to Seth Rollins is this. Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch do not exist. The character Seth Rollins and the character Becky Lynch have no chemistry. If you listen to this show, you will know that I said on many occasions, I'm sure they're fine backstage. I'm sure that there's plenty of chemistry. You don't fall in love with somebody and become engaged to marry them if there's no chemistry. So obviously there's chemistry. It does not mean it translates to your characters. So I don't think Seth Rollins can really take this personally. No one is saying there's no chemistry between him and his fiance outside the ring, but they're not allowed to. When you're trying to play this badass tough guy and she's trying to play this badass brawling female, it's not easy to maintain that badassery and show true caring and emotion. Imagine Steve Austin if he had to be hauling around a woman saying, I love you, honey. It wouldn't work, right? Because you'd say, wait a minute, Steve Austin's just, you know, the glass breaks, he kicks people's ass, he drinks beer. He's just a raw, tough-ass, mean. Well, that's kind of Becky Lynch and to a lesser extent, Seth Rollins. And then when you tried to throw that romance into the mix, I think it hurt the chemistry of their character. And because it was hurting the chemistry of their character, they were unsure, and they weren't exactly sure what they would do or how they should feel or how they should react as a character. If you do something so out of character, if your character is explained to you as you're a badass character who don't care about anything or anyone and all you do is just, you know, you go out and beat people up, and then you have to suddenly say, no, no, we're changing all that. Now you're madly in love and you have to exude that love. Well, that's very hard to do. And you say to yourself, how do I do that and maintain this character? That's where Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch struggled. It's not necessarily they had no chemistry. It's that their characters had no chemistry. And I think that's a point that's overlooked, Mike.
Right. I mean, let's look at it in a different way, Marcus. Okay? Look at Rusev and Lana. Even though they're on opposite sides, the chemistry oozes. When they're on screen, the chemistry oozes off of them. It just does. No matter how much they want to say they're not together or they're not a couple or whatever, the chemistry just oozes off of those two. Whereas with Becky Lynch and what's called, like you said, and Seth Rollins, like you said, you know, Rebecca Quinn and Colby Lopez, that's Seth Rollins, may have chemistry with each other, but that's backstage.
Right.
That's backstage stuff. That's not Lana.
See, what you
got to
understand is Rusev and Lana came in as a team. They're always a team. So they always had the opportunity to show chemistry with each other. Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch, not so. So when they threw them together, Seth Rollins had already worked hard at establishing this, you know, attitude of devil may care, you know, high flying, risk taking, badass guy. And Becky Lynch had struggled hard to be this no nonsense, only thinking about my career, bashing girls in the mouth type. And all of a sudden you say, go out there and be Romeo and Juliet. And you're like, how do I do that and still maintain this character? That's very tough. And that was a mistake the WWE made. So I don't think Seth Rollins should be so hard on the fans when he's saying, you know, it hurts to be told you have no chemistry with the person you love. The fans don't know you. The fans don't know Becky Lynch. Well, I mean, they know Becky Lynch. They don't know Rebecca Quinn, right? So the problem is we only know what we see. And what we see was totally the opposite of what your characters were presented to us as for a long period of time. And that's very difficult for us to accept. It's very difficult for you to portray. And because of that, I think it got lost in the shuffle. Now, Seth Rollins says, I think we're going to put that behind us for a little while. I think that's an excellent idea. I think that's an excellent idea. And we'll get to a little bit more of that when we go to the AEW review. But Seth Rollins did a pretty good job. There is no doubt in my mind. He says, you know, I haven't changed my attitude, and I still feel like I'm a fan favorite. People cheer me in different cities. It's just that, you know, you don't see the dark matches. You don't see all the other things where everybody's yelling, burn it down. You just hear those 35 people booing when the music stops. Yeah, that's what he's supposed to say. Seth Rollins is turning heel, and I'm glad because he's a better heel. Anyway, as far as AEW is concerned, this was a pretty damn good show. And there is absolutely no doubt about one thing. If you're an AEW fan, you know that the heart of AEW is Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes is almost, I'm not saying he's single-handedly carrying the company, but he's damn close. Because he's the guy who can take the mic and make you buy into his fights. He's the guy who can get a good match done in the ring. He's the guy who's obviously behind the planning of a lot of this stuff. And Cody Rhodes did another great job this week of calling out MJF. Great promo. Decent match to open the show with the Bucks. However, here is a word to the wise, and here's a word to Cody. You promised the fans a more realistic, believable wrestling federation. This is not working with your wife. this horrible Brandi Rhodes cult thing that she's trying to do is stupid. And no one is buying it. It doesn't even bode well because you're the one who said, no, we're going to bring like realism to it. Well, everybody knows she's your wife. You're a face. She's a heel, obviously. What do you talk about when you go home? I'm going to my cult meeting. I'm going to go challenge MJF. Well, it doesn't make any sense. There are many, many ways you can use Brandi Rhodes to further the whole Cody Rhodes situation and to further we're a couple and we're, you know, whatever. You chose not to. You chose to branch her out into some ridiculous angle that smacks more of an old WWE angle. This is basically, well, actually, it smacks more of a Florida Championship Wrestling. This is Kevin Sullivan and Woman cutting people's hair from the audience and stuff. That, you know, go back in your history books. Kevin Sullivan did that when he formed his devil cult. So, okay, so you basically took the satanic cult from Kevin Sullivan and you're working that with Brandi Rhodes, who's not able to use the mic. I'm sorry. I have met Brandi Rhodes a few times in person. She is a delightful, charming, articulate, friendly person. Someone who you would be very, very happy to meet and talk to. But that does not make her good at using a microphone in a pro wrestling ring, and she's not. And it does not make this angle good or her the right person for this angle, and she isn't. And your women's division is already not great. And to add these type of storylines, which are just like, this is ridiculous and it's almost laughable. A woman from the audience comes, I mean, this is 19, I thought you said, oh, we're moving forward with stuff. We're not going to do these writers and ridiculous angles. That's a pretty ridiculous angle that a woman would just get out of the audience and have her ponytail cut off and her hair cut. Come on. And by the way, how many cults are you going to have in AEW? So I think they need to watch that, Todd, because I think that, you know, I think you're jumping the shark with this, and I do think that Brandi Rhodes is not the right person for this.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, when she was in the WWE, she was not good on the mic either. And she was like a ring announcer for NXT. She was a ring announcer. She was not good doing that either. I think she needs a lot of mic work.
I mean, ring announcing is one thing. Getting something across to an audience is another mic, and this just is not working.
Right. You know, we talk about all the time woman to put with Bray Wyatt. Problem with that is there aren't many women that are as good on a mic as Bray Wyatt is, you know?
No.
And this is basically what they're trying to do is a cult leader type gimmick. And if you had somebody like, I don't know, Rosemary or Nikki Cross or somebody like that that's
right,
more than great on the mic, it will work. You know,
but you see what I'm talking about when I say, like, all the fans know Cody Rhodes is married to Brandi Rhodes, so it doesn't work. Fans are saying, oh, this is just a character she's playing, so this is not good, you know?
Right, I get that. I mean, I'll put it to you another way about her on the mic. Her on the mic is every bit as bad as Dixie Carter was.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah, you're right. It's not good. And again, no knock on Brandi Rhodes. She is a delightful person to talk to. But she's just not good. I'm sorry. She's just not. And you're going to have to accept that and give her – there's a many roles that doesn't require her to use the microphone to this extent or to be something she cannot be. There's many roles. This is one role that she's just totally miscast in, and this is a problem. Because you don't have anything good going on in the women's division, and this is bad. So all you really have going on in the women's division is – this, and that's not good. Having said that, the list of Jericho returns in a roundabout way, and Jericho now reads out a list of people he will not fight for the title. He said he's contractually obligated to wrestle one more time this year, and he's reading a list of people who will not get a title shot. Every third one is Jon Moxley. Celebrities, other sports stars, fictional characters are all on the list as well. But out come the Jurassic Express there, and they say, well, you know, we're not, none of us are on the list. And he says, well, you know, you didn't let me finish. Not going to wrestle any dinosaurs or little children. And as far as this Jungle Boy, he hasn't won one single match. Now, I got to tell you, I don't care who his father is. This guy can't act. He cannot act. And you could clearly see he was afraid to slap Chris Jericho. He slapped Chris Jericho with the brush of his fingers so lightly, I'm surprised Jericho sold it at all. At all. Very funny segment. Chris Jericho knows exactly what he's doing in the ring. He's extraordinarily confident in what he can do. He knows how to play the audience. This little team, this little Jurassic team is funny and cute and all that. But as much as the guy may be athletic, he's not good on the mic. And he looked nervous having to banter with Chris Jericho. And unfortunately, when you're across the ring from Chris Jericho, and you've got to hold your own on the mic, that's a tough task. Especially if you're not used to having that mic. That's a real tough task. He certainly didn't do his job. Supposedly there's going to be a fight. I would guess, I would bet about everything I have in the world that Jon Moxley will interfere in that. But irregardless to all of that, the Jericho segment with the quasi-list, I thought was pretty funny, Mike.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny as well. And every time he said Jon Moxley, you know it's coming. You know
right.
That match is coming, and it's coming before the end of the year. Because they made it a point for him to say it's not going to happen. And, it has to happen, you know, between the end of the year, you know. And as he's reading that list of these characters, and every third or fourth person is every third or fourth name is Jon Moxley, you know it's going to be Jon Moxley. You know it.
Of course. Yeah, that, exactly. And then that's where the gold is that he's selling the match by saying it's not going to happen. That's typical Jericho. Works very well. Always has. Probably always will. He's great at what he does. Simple as that. He's just great at what he does. And Christopher Daniels, Pentagon Jr. put on a good match. Ray Phoenix and Trent put on a good match. This was a pretty damn good show. Joey Janela, Jon Moxley, you know, it is what it is with Jericho and his crew in the audience. I really think ring-wise, AEW wins this week. I think the action, the actual wrestling matches were better. However, they were weak on two things. As strong as the list of Jericho, whatever you want to call it, was, that Jungle Boy response was bad. And it hurt the segment. Brandi Rhodes segment, a disaster. Abject disaster. Cody Rhodes segment, brilliant. MJF segment, excellent. But there were a couple of bad segments in this show. If you switch on over to NXT, I think the action was not quite as good. But I think the buildup was superior. Because at the end of the day, we know what we're getting, don't we? We're getting Tommaso Ciampa. We're getting Finn Balor and Keith Lee to decide who is going to take on Adam Cole for the NXT Championship, and that's a match I am sure every wrestling fan wants to see. I am 100% confident, and I am so happy, by the way, for Keith Lee. I'm sure I'm not the only guy who told him, you're not going to be in the wrestling in front of 100 people for very long. I am sure I'm not the only guy. But I certainly was the only guy that night. And he seemed very happy to hear it. And I'm very happy to tell you that it's not the first person I've said this to It's not the first person that's had tryouts for NXT or went on to Lucha Underground or some other things. I have a pretty good eye for what talent could potentially become. And you can see that extra element. There's three things to look for. One is how you play the crowd. You know, so many people come out here and just say, well, I can do my flip moves, and did you see how well I hit this and how well I hit that? Yeah, great. But you didn't play the crowd. Playing the crowd is extraordinarily important. And that means all four corners, not just your little rooting section in, you know, C. Two is how you present yourself. Do you come out as a professional? Do you look professional? Do you act professional? And then three is obviously your talent in the ring. And then the intangible is a real passion for it. I can't tell you how many times I've talked to some people who said, well, you know, we put on a shorter match and a little less whatever because there was only like 80 people out there. Okay, well, that's a mistake. I watched Keith Lee damn near kill himself for 100 people. And you could tell he had a passion for it. Absolutely could tell. During intermission, he would walk out into the crowd to a merch table, but he'd also walk around the crowd, get pictures taken, talk to people, take feedback. And that's an important part of it as well. So I knew Keith Lee would get to this point at some point in his career. It went a little quicker than I thought even. And it would not surprise me if he ends up NXT champion, although he may not, because I have a feeling Vince McMahon wants him on Raw or SmackDown. Anyway, we were treated to some good matches, some, you know, matches. Look, Pete Dunne is one of my favorite wrestlers. He cannot continue to lose. Number one, I think it was a mistake and a huge one to make him a face. He was a smarmy little nasty-faced guy who you say, man, you'd love to punch that guy in the nose. But he's obviously really good at what he does, and he's a tricky little bastard, and he's a tough little brute. And to water him down by making him a face, probably a mistake. Probably a mistake. Killian Dane is, you know, listen, I don't know why the Vince McMahon saw nothing in Killian Dane. It's exactly the type of person Vince McMahon likes. A big guy, somewhat agile. I don't know. I don't know what the problem is. But all in all, I think that the NXT in-ring work this week, while it was very good, I don't think it was up to AEW quality, Mike. We saw some very short matches and some matches that were just, you know, filler almost, and weird.
Right. I don't think so either. You're right about Keith Lee, because at one point, you know, as they were going through, as Keith Lee and Dodge COVID were going through their thing, and then after that, when they put them together in the Survivor Series team, I'm looking at them, I'm saying, well, they're going to put these two guys together as a tag team, and that'd be a formidable tag team. But then again, as he's having his meteoric rise, I don't think they can afford to do that now. Because Vince is going to, like you say, Vince is going to want him on either SmackDown or Raw. And I tell you what, with all the big guys on SmackDown, you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised that he goes to Raw.
No, I wouldn't either. And Todd, listen, if it's going to happen to anybody, it probably couldn't happen to a better guy than Keith Lee. Here's a guy that if you talk to anybody on the indie scene said, always a pleasure to work with, always happy, always smiling, always glad to, you know, come in the ring and do whatever he's got to do. No complaints. Always friendly to the crowd. Always up for a picture or an autograph or talking to a fan. This is the type of person that's a really good representative, someone who really, really wanted it. as opposed to somebody who thinks they just deserve it. And it couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about Keith Lee. When we saw him wrestle Bob Holly at the one of the indie shows down in New Jersey, mm-hmm. and he's like, he's going to make it. He tests Keith Lee out in that one match with him, and I'll give him a thumbs up for it.
And if you remember, a couple times before that, when we saw him fighting JT Dunn, and we had said, this guy's not going to be around long. Someone's going to grab him up. When we went and saw him wrestle Bob Holly, I said, this is someone's test. Someone has saying, look, let's send a guy down here who's a real veteran and can judge talent to see, and not just another indie worker. And if you remember, Bob Holly took the microphone that night and said the same thing. That guy is going to be big. And I think he is. I really think he is. Now, that does not mean that he doesn't have a long road ahead of him, because if he does come to the WWE, things change. And you know how stars can be made into, you know, nothing in months in the WWE. So, you know, you got to prepare for the worst if you're doing that. But right now he's riding high and definitely deserves it. I was really surprised at the match with Shayna Baszler and Xia Li, because I thought this was to highlight her a little bit. And it was real short and it was really just weird. And it was a good match, Mike, but I don't think it did anything to help anybody but Baszler.
No, I don't think so either. I really wish that match would be long, because look, Xia Li is a striker and so is Shayna Baszler. Now, granted, yep. Shayna Baszler found a way to put her finisher on her, but I would have loved to have seen a nice 12-15 minute match with these two women, because I know they would give them some shots. And I mean, Xia Li is a good wrestler, but she's a striker, and so is Shayna Baszler. You know, so. And that could be a match for the future. That could, now, if Shayna Baszler ends up going up at some point, then it's not going to happen. But if she stays down here a little while, that could be a match that could happen in the future again.
No doubt. I was really surprised that it wasn't a longer match. And like you said, both being strikers and everything, I thought the object of this match, to be honest, was to promote Lee a little bit. And to say, oh, I knew she wasn't going to win. But I thought what we were going to get is, wow, she's the real deal. And we ended up with, nah, she ain't ready. I was a little disappointed in that, to be honest. Of course, Kushida makes his comeback. You know, that was good. All in all, however, and of course we had a great main event. But the bottom line of NXT this week was, we're building for what's coming. This was almost like a building NXT. And certainly at the end of NXT, I'm left saying, oh my God, I can't wait to see the pre-Christmas show, because that's going to be awesome. But this particular show, I think was a little flat compared to last week. It wasn't an awful show. It was a good show. I'd still give it a B or a B, even a B plus. But if you're going to really dissect what the better show was from a wrestling fan's point of view, in my opinion, this week, I think AEW takes it by a little. They almost lost it thanks to Brandi Rhodes. Almost. But they didn't. They put on a couple of extraordinarily good matches. And I think they did a little building. I mean, the thing with Cody Rhodes and MJF was fantastic, and people certainly want to see that match now, don't they? Moxley and Jericho is building nicely, and they're doing a really good job with that. They're getting their ducks in a row, and at the same time, they were able to present some really high-quality wrestling matches, including one of the better one of the better women's matches that they've had in a while. So I'm going to give the slight nod this week to AEW. Mike, what about you?
I'm going to give it to AEW again, but like you said, AEW is going to get a B plus, and NXT is going to get a B. Simple fact that if they had given those two girls a longer match, Baszler and Lee a longer match, then NXT would have gotten probably an A-minus from them, just on the strength of that match alone, if it had been a longer match.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I think that what we're looking at here with this NXT AEW back and forth. And by the way, last week NXT did win in the ratings. We were talking about that. NXT did win. So this is a shifting back and forth sort of thing. This week again will be crucial because NXT did not put on the better show this week. So if NXT manages to win the ratings anyway, then that means more people are saying, okay, I saw what AEW has to offer, and it was great for a few weeks, but I'm starting to shift. If we start to see a shift, this could be very, very worrisome to AEW. Now, the thing is, when you break down the graphics, AEW still has a higher majority of younger viewers. I think like the 16 to 21 demographic is, or 25 or whatever it is very high compared to NXT. NXT with over 50, it's not close. NXT takes that away. So there definitely does seem to be a shifting, and the shifting is that the younger audience is going for AEW, which in a way surprises me. In a way that surprises me. Mike, what's your thoughts on that?
It surprises me, too, because you've got, how is Jericho appealing to a younger audience? I mean, it's like, he's what, 50, 45, whatever, you know, and you know, you look at a lot of these other, you got some younger people, but again, what did we say, what was that poll about a year or so ago about the average age of the WWE fan base?
Yeah, wasn't that surprising? Yeah, that was really surprising. And it was over 50,
yeah.
Right? Very surprising. I think that that's going to continue. I think that trend is going to continue. The younger audiences are going to go for, I think, AEW. The older, I would call the more chiseled, I've watched wrestling longer fans seem to be going for NXT. And that demographic right in the middle, that's going to be the important one. It's almost like the presidential elections, isn't it? You've got your diehard on both sides who are going to vote Democrat or Republican, doesn't matter. And then you got your independents who are saying, I'm not sure. Well, that's kind of what you got here. You've got your young demographic who has basically said, no, I'm with AEW. You've got your older demographic who says, I'm with NXT. And you got that block, which presumably includes all of us, dead center, saying, not sure. I like them both. Kind of shifting back and forth. I'm watching match here, match there, going back and forth, deciding what I want to watch, what's most interesting to me. That's the winnable demographic. That's the one that's going to decide, ultimately, who's going to get the better ratings. And that would be what? I guess the 30 to 45 or 40 whatever crowd, that's the crowd that's up for grabs. I'm not saying that there isn't NXT fans that are younger. Of course there are. And I'm not saying there aren't AEW fans that are older. Of course there are. But for the most part, NXT has that older crowd sewed up. And it looks like AEW has that younger crowd sewed up. So what is really up for grabs and is going to ultimately decide this is that middle ground, Mike. And I'm not sure where they're going to shift.
Right. I'm not sure either. And the fact of the matter is you, I mean, you look at that, you look at that announced crew for AEW, you know, that's a veteran, minus what's his name? That's a veteran announced crew there. Veteran. Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone. They've been doing this a long time. One is, you got the younger announced crew in, well, if you want to throw out, well, she's a rookie announcer, as Beth Phoenix is sort of a rookie announcer in NXT right now, but that's a younger announcer crew, so that kind of fits with what we're talking about here. And speaking, and one other thing, speaking of announcers, looks like Bad News Barrett is back in the States as the replacement for Jim Cornette.
Yeah. Well, listen, we said about Keith Lee couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Jim Cornette couldn't happen to a nicer guy, right? Live by the sword, die by the sword, Jim. He can explain away all he wants. See, Jim Cornette is one of those guys who, when I do bad, you're an idiot if you don't believe my excuse. When I say something stupid, it was a mistake, and you took it the wrong way. I know what I'm talking about. You don't. You don't. But when someone else does it, they're a horrible racist who needs to be removed from the planet. See, that's the problem with Jim Cornette. That's why he makes no sense. That's why he's a hypocrite. That's why I don't like him. But speaking of announced teams, I'm told that Dio Madden is out for a while, that Vince did not care for him as an announcer, that they're going to let him, I guess, go back to doing some wrestling, and at the same time, coach him a little bit on the announced team so that when Samoa Joe is possibly ready to go back into the ring, Dio Madden will, I guess, take back over. A little bit sorry to hear that, because Samoa Joe is actually more entertaining as an announcer than he is as a wrestler, in my opinion. And I know that's an unpopular opinion, but I've never been a huge Samoa Joe fan on the inside of the ring. I've always said he's a great talker. He has a great look, but I just don't think he puts on a great match. And he's very good in the announce team. So at least we'll get to enjoy him for a little bit longer, but apparently Dio Madden wasn't what Vince McMahon was looking for, Todd.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I don't think Dio Madden was a great announcer at all. And like you said with Samoa Joe, I think he's a better announcer than a wrestler right now, technically. And he's more like the straight appeal and announcer.
Yeah, and he's articulate. He gets in some very good points. I enjoyed him a lot this week. I do want to mention that I had a couple of people say to me, and I'll get to you guys on this and see if you've experienced this. Had a couple of people say to me they were having a really tough time hearing the announce team on AEW, that the announcing, the level of the announcers on AEW was so low, they were having trouble with it. Now, I don't know whether it was just their broadcast. I didn't really experience that, but I know a lot of people who did. Mike, did you have any problems with that?
Yeah, at least for the first, let's say, 45 minutes of the show, you know, where it'd go up and down, and it wasn't just a little up and down, it was a drastic difference, you know.
Mm.
It's like, I'm trying to listen to what Schiavone and Jim Ross were saying, and I can barely hear them, you know.
Wow, yeah, see, unacceptable. Unacceptable. Got to have all those problems worked out before you go live on the air. Absolutely no doubt about it. And you're not the only, like I said, I've had a lot of people now say to me, what happened? Was there a problem? I don't know. You'd have thought they'd have recognized it after 1 or 2 minutes, not an hour. Todd, did you have any problem hearing the announce team?
Oh, yeah, you bet I did. And reminds me of the first episode of WCW Thunder that Petra kept cutting out, going like, technical difficulties, please stand by. And you hear the announce team, like, sound like you're listening to like an old radio thing.
Yeah.
An old radio show.
That's not good. That's not good. And you know what makes that's a shame, because people get aggravated behind that and then they switch. So that'll be interesting to see what the ratings show like for that first hour. If people got fed up and said, hey, I'm just switching over to NXT. Very interesting. Now, I will tell you this about AEW. AEW has ran this federation thus far about as well as you possibly could ever hope anybody would do it. Their enthusiasm was obvious, but they did not get carried away with it. In other words, when they were winning the ratings and it was looking like WWE was taking a beating, they really didn't gloat. They really didn't. They just said, oh, no, you know, look, we're happy. We're not really in competition with the WWE. Whatever happens, happens. We're just running our federation. If more people watch, fine. You know, we're just trying to concentrate on putting the best product we can on. We're not worried about what the competition's doing. That was good, because if it flips the other way now, they can say, well, we always said, you know, it wasn't a competition. We're just trying to put on our best product. So with that in mind, I was a little surprised that they pulled what I think was a mocking of the WWE, using Britt Baker in the audience and showing her in that exact same facial expression with her hands like in a praying motion up to her mouth and saying, that's Adam Cole's girlfriend. You caught that, right, Mike?
Yeah. I thought, wasn't she Ciampa's girlfriend? I thought she was Ciampa's girlfriend.
Adam Cole's,
yeah. Okay, so, yeah. I mean, that's very, I mean, if you want to say that's on the edge, you know, doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, and look, you're talking about, you know, what you said about them not being all full of themselves and saying this and that and this and that. This isn't the WCW where they made it a point at times when they were beating them beating the WWF at the time, that this match is going to take place. This is going to be their main event, and this is who won. You know, that's what they did. Go back and listen to them. You know,
yes.
This was when they were beating the WWE in the ratings.
Yep, and that's exactly my point. I don't want AEW to fall into that trap. I don't want them to say, "Uh-oh, maybe we're starting to lose ground. It might be time to pick on the WWE a little bit." You're above that at this point. You've kept yourself above that. The Britt Baker thing was marginal. I know you're going to say WWE did it first. You're absolutely right. They sure did. But I think ignoring it was the high ground. And doing this looked a little petty. It looked a little bit like, oh, well, you want to do that to us, we'll do it right back to you. Not a fan of it. I hope AEW takes the high ground with this whole thing. Because, again, I warned everyone when AEW started. I said, you have an awful lot of AEW fans that are young. Remember I said that? Said their demographic is, of their main core audience, seems to be, you know, Comic-Con age. And those people are fickle. And if they find that anything else is flavor of the week cool, they desert you like rats on a sinking ship and on to the next thing. Oh, AEW was cool last year. This year it's whatever. You need to reach out to that hardcore base, and I don't mean hardcore wrestling. I mean that solid group of wrestling fans who aren't going anywhere ever, that love professional wrestling, period. Which includes everyone on this panel. We love professional wrestling. You can't play to that audience that's flavor of the week, because, again, they come and go. You're cool this year because it's the cool thing. Oh, if you're a hip dude, you're into AEW. If you're hip, you better have an AEW t-shirt. And then next year, it's F that. You want those long-term hardcore wrestling fans who say, I've watched wrestling my whole life long, and I will watch it until the day I croak. That's the fans you really want, because those are the fans going to stick with you. And that's usually not the younger audience, because a lot of these younger audience, they become disenfranchised with it after a while. You're 17, you're 18, and you're like, oh, yeah, wrestling's cool. And all of a sudden you're like, yeah, it's not that cool. And you're on to something else. So when I say that middle ground age bracket is crucial, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. It's great to have the older 50 and older crowd. That's great. But again, that crowd is busy. Usually they've got a lot going on in their life. They're not going to watch 150 hours of wrestling a week. You need that middle ground. You need that 29 or 30 to 45. That's your key right there. If you can get that crowd, because that's the crowd that usually grew up watching wrestling and they're still watching it. You know, a lot of people I know, when they were 16, they watched wrestling and they're like, I gave up that when I was 18, 19, I quit watching. Well, that's going to happen to the same as it did then. It's going to happen now. It's the real fans that last into their 30s. From teens. They're not going anywhere. They're always going to watch wrestling. It's just, what are they going to watch? Which federation are they going to watch? But they're not giving up on the actual business. Not at this stage of their life. It's those 16, 17, 18, 19-year-olds that are potentially going to give up on it. Even into the 20s. After that, you get a little more solid fan base. So that's why, Mike, I'm saying that demographic is probably the most important.
Right. Look at what happened with the Attitude Era. Before the Attitude Era, what was the average age of, they were looking at, 12 to 20-something, because yep. They wanted a younger audience. Then the Attitude Era comes in, and that lower age went from 10 to 12 to 18 to, 28. And it stayed.
Yeah.
It stayed there through the Ruthless Aggression Era. Now, it's been kind of dwindling since they've been bad on WWE, but it stayed there, And that 18 to 24 became the 30, in the mid-2000s, became that 30, that age 30, let's say 35 to 50,
Agreed. That's exactly correct. And that's why I'm saying these guys that are in there, there's guys that's going to be 16 that when they're 60, they're still going to be watching wrestling. But there's going to be less of them. That's my point. If you're 16 years old or 17 years old right now, your chances of still watching wrestling when you're, 35 is less than a guy who's 25. Because if you're 25, you've probably watched it for 9 years. And if you've been watching it for 9 or 10 years, you're probably not giving up on it. If you're 16, maybe you watched it a few years. And I liked it for a while. It's almost like, did you ever listen to a band? And you loved the band and you had the posters on your wall and everything when you were 16. And now you're 30. And you go back and say, let me listen to that band again. And you're like, oh. Shit. What was I thinking? That was pretty corny. I don't really like it anymore. Your taste changes. And that happens to a lot of people. And they say, I liked wrestling at once. Yeah, I meet people all the time who are, in their late 20s, mid 30s, and they say, I loved wrestling when I was 17, but nah, I don't watch it anymore. That's my point. These people move on. And if that's your demographic, AEW, the young, those are the people most likely to move on. if the WWE's got the over 50, those guys are going to watch till they croak. You're not going to be 50 years old and say, wrestling's stupid now. You're not going to do that. You're going to watch it. So you got the solid fan base. AEW has the fan base that could potentially desert the ship. And right dead center of the middle is that big, fat fan base that you want. And AEW or NXT or WWE or whatever, though, that's the one that they really got to try to grab, in my opinion. Everyone's saying, grab the young audience. No, grab the old audience. No, man, grab the middle ground. I'm telling you, that's where it's at. You grab the middle ground, you got a fan probably for life. You grab the young, they're fickle. You grab the old, they're busy and they do things and they forget and I'm just going to watch it for a half hour and go to bed. You need that middle ground. And we'll see who gets that. Should be very, very interesting to see how that plays out. But this week, I'm giving the win to AEW. I thought AEW was a better show overall. Having said that, let me give some credit to Adam Cole, who really took a tremendous, I don't want to say it was a bump because he didn't land hard or anything. It wasn't a bump, but did a tremendous job of selling Keith Lee's shoulder block into the audience, which turned into like a crowd surfing thing. That was pretty damn cool. And it really did look like the Hulk, you know, smashing Thor in the Avengers. You know, it's just like, goodbye, boom. And there goes Adam Cole into outer space. He did it sideways. I want people to understand that. That's not easy. So what they basically did was to say, I'm legitimately going to jump, but I can't throw myself sideways. If he did it from his back, you can throw yourself. If you hit him in the front, you can a little bit throw yourself backwards. Sideways is harder. So kind of what Adam Cole did was to say, I'm going to launch myself up in the air and you really just shoulder block me hard. So I fly, you know, five rows in. And Mikey, he sure as hell did. And that looked fantastic.
Right. That kind of reminds me of what, you know, that running shoulder block that Strowman does, or remember that thing where he, I believe it was Strowman, threw Kevin Owens off the cage backwards.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's what that reminded me of.
Did an excellent job with that. And also, I think that while I wasn't a huge fan of the match this week, the one thing that I thought was a great takeaway from the Pete Dunne, Killian Dane match was Pete Dunne's logic. At no time did Pete Dunne stand toe to toe with Killian Dane. This was a very clear in its psychology that Pete Dunne was far smaller, could not stand toe-to-toe, had to hit and run, had to try to take the legs out, had to try to run them and get his cardio down. Everything Pete Dunne did was what a small guy would do if he was fighting a big guy, and everything Pete Dunne sold was, this guy's too big for me to stand toe-to-toe with, Mike. I think that was it. He did an excellent job with that.
Right. Now the question is, was Finn Balor paying attention to that? Because we talk about how Finn Balor has had problems with that, trying to stand up like he's 6 inches and 100 pounds heavier than he really is. You know?
Yeah, no,
Dunne,
you're right.
We know what Pete Dunne should be. We know what Pete Dunne should be. I mean, Pete Dunne should be that Ric Flair type of guy, the guy that you wanna. That smug and stuff, that you wanna, punch in the mouth, but you're afraid if you do, he's gonna break your leg, you know?
Right. Yep. There's no question. Pete Dunne has that psychology down. You hit the nail on the head with Finn Balor. Finn Balor does this way, way too much for a guy his size, and that is stand toe to toe with people. I watched him do it with Braun Strowman. when he was in the WWE, literally try to exchange punches with Braun Strowman. Flabbergasting. Where Pete Dunne is trying to take the leg out, trying to work the fingers, trying to run him and get him tired, trying to stay away, hit and run, keep his distance. And naturally, Killian Dane is trying to close the ring off and make it, you know, use his power. Those type of matches are why it's okay to have smaller wrestlers. But if you're going to have the smaller wrestlers, like an Adam Cole, like a Finn Balor, like a Pete Dunne, stand toe-to-toe with guys like Killian Dane and Keith Lee and Dijakovic, what's the point? What's the point? So I was glad to see that Pete Dunne did not do that, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, with Pete Dunne. Hey, don't work with having one head blow the blows with big guys. And like what Shawn Michaels tried to do, that didn't work either. Bret Hart, that didn't work. It was good he didn't go blow the blow with him this past week.
You know, the funny thing is we used to get on Bret Hart about that, and Bret Hart was still, you know, 230. He wasn't a small, small guy. He was, you know, he was a decent-sized guy from back then. You know, again, we watched, I think it was Billy Gunn not that long ago in the ring, and we were saying, you know, Billy Gunn was never considered in his day a huge monster-type guy. He was an average-sized guy. Maybe a little bigger than average, but he wasn't played up as, you know, a monster. And now he gets in the ring with some of these people, and you're like, holy crap. He's twice their size. And there's no question about the fact that wrestlers have gotten smaller and they're being accepted a lot smaller. But with that has to come the psychology of you cannot treat every opponent equally. You have got to look at the size of that person and say, there's no logical way I could fight this guy in an actual brawl. So I'm going to have to try to use this psychology in this match. Hit and run, take the legs out, try not to let him get a hold of me. And so many missed that point, Mike.
Right. And, you know, you do have guys that actually get it. And, you know, Pete Dunne gets it. Ciampa gets it. Gargano, when he's healthy, gets it. You know, there are guys that get this. Even to some extent, you know, AJ Styles is no bigger than some of these guys I'm naming. You know, he gets it.
Right. And again, there's no excuse for a guy like Finn Balor not to. Now, maybe Finn Balor in the NXT, we're going to see him get it. I want to see how this goes with Keith Lee. Tommaso Ciampa and him are approximately the same size. Keith Lee is a monster compared to them, compared to a lot of people. And he's going to have to sell him differently. And if he does not, I guarantee Ciampa will. I just want to see if Finn Balor does. Just for fun, before we say goodbye to the audience today, I'm going to have a pick'em here. I believe it's December 18th they're having this match. Who's winning this match, do you think, Mike? The three-way between Ciampa, Balor, and Keith Lee.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm gonna go ahead and say Ciampa, just for the sake of they want him to be the champion again.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna go Ciampa too, because this whole thing with Daddy's home and calling the belt Goldie, they definitely want him to be the champion. And by the way, that wasn't always the case, because apparently they wanted Ciampa to come up to the main roster again. And he said, no, thank you. He'd rather stay where he is. That's huge. When a guy like Ciampa legitimately says, no, I think I want to stay here. I'm comfortable wrestling here. I'm not so comfortable wrestling there. That tells you something. You can say what you want about what's the A show. Is it Raw? Is it SmackDown? Technically, it's probably NXT. At least in the eyes of the wrestlers, and it's starting to become that way in the eyes of the fans. Who do you think's winning this, Todd?
I gotta go with the former champ who never lost at Ciampa.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to be, but I'll tell you, that's going to be a hell of a match. if that doesn't win the ratings war, I want to see what AEW puts up against it, because there's two schools of thought. One is they're going to try to win it and they're going to pull something big and say, we're going to have a major, major match here. Or they're just going to concede it and say, look, most people are going to watch that. We're going to just build. We're just going to have a show of building. So I'll be very interested to see what they do. Either way, thanks for listening, and we will be back here on Sunday with more Wrestle Chat Radio.
You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio.
Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.